You're working work for years and years. You're always on the go. You never take a minute off, too busy making dough. Someday you say you'll have your fun when you're a millionaire. Imagine all the fun you'll have in your old rocking chair.
Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think. Enjoy yourself while you're still in the pink. The years go by as quickly as a wink. Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.
What I have to tell is a very grim story indeed.
But it does require that we have a moratorium on any new coal-fired power plants, and over the next 25 to 30 years, we're going to have to phase out those that exist.
What if you knew that every time you flip on your light switch, a mountaintop in West Virginia just blows up?
Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Alex is about to die. And enter the year 2009.
Is it already too late to stop rampant climate change? An emailed blog posting asks, do we just enjoy the time we have left? Scientist James Lovelock thinks so. He wanted the subtitle of his new book, Vanishing Gaia, changed from Final Warning to Enjoy It While You Can. He tells famous interviewer David Frost in April 2009.
Enjoy it while you can.
Enjoy it while you can. And how old are you now?
I'll be 90 in July.
Is it really that serious? We'll hear top American and British administrators say that it is. But I want to contrast the response by two scientists, James Lovelock, who at age 90 plans to blast out into space, and NASA's James Hansen, the first world-class climate scientist to put himself up for arrest to stop mountaintop coal mining in West Virginia. Doubting coal barons, the black secret of George Soros, U.S. climate dodgers in Canada, from outer space to the deepest pit, enjoy yourself. This is Radio EcoShock.
It's good to be wise when you're young. If you could only be young before once. Enjoy yourself and have lots of fun. Yeah.
That's The Specials, in a UK appearance with their remake of the 1949 hit you heard at the beginning of this program, Enjoy Yourself, It's Later Than You Think, by Canadian Guy Lombardo and his band. On June 18th, Hillary S. challenged her Care to Global Warming blog readers.
What I want to know is this. Can we as individuals actually do enough to stop it in time? Or should we just do what little we can and enjoy the time we have left?
That brought a blistering response from the Deep Green author, Derek Jensen.
This is why I hate so much of the so-called environmental movement. We're talking about life on this planet, and people move directly from consumer choices to giving up.
I'm sorry Derek is driven to hate others who are struggling to understand this new reality. He's already concluded that industrial civilization is not, and never can be, sustainable. In fact, he thinks civilization will and should fail.
A few years ago, I began to feel pretty apocalyptic, but I hesitated to use that word, in part because of those cartoons I've seen of crazy penitents carrying the end is near signs, and in part because of the power of the word itself. Apocalypse. I didn't want to use it lightly. And then a friend and fellow activist said to me, so Derek, what's it going to take for you to finally use that word? Will it take the death of runs of salmon so large that people are afraid to put their boats in the water for fear they'd capsize? So large that horses were afraid to get in the water. So large that you would hear them long before you would see them. Or maybe it'll take the death of flocks of passenger pigeons so large they darkened the sky for days at a time. So large that they were as loud as thunder, moving 60 miles an hour. Maybe it'll take the death of flocks of Eskimo curlews just as large. Maybe it'll take the turning of the sea off San Diego into a dead zone. Maybe it'll take putting dioxin in every mother's breast milk. Maybe it'll take 90% of the large fish in the oceans being gone. You know, what's it going to take, Derek? What's a threshold? Give me a threshold at which you're finally going to use that word. I ask people all over the country, do you believe that our culture is going to undergo a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living? And the answer is the same as at least a couple people in the front row with chuckles. Oftentimes people laugh out loud. It's absurd. And the next question is, if you don't believe that the culture is going to go undergo a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living, what does that mean for your strategy and for your tactics? And the answer is we don't know. And one of the reasons we don't know is because we don't talk about it. And one of the reasons we don't talk about it is because we're all so busy pretending that we have hope.
Derek Jensen, March 2006. In my opinion, Jensen's anger won't help the world either. He advocates blowing up dams, but never gets arrested himself. I've recorded Derek bragging about his personal AK-47 attack rifle and his friends knowledgeable about explosives, but he has no coherent way forward, as far as I can see, other than all fall down. For me, Derek Jensen is a little like the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. What we need is to read it and go through the fire of his nihilism in order to realize what we really do think. I might recommend Jensen's new book, Endgame 3, if it wasn't 500 pages long. The Care 2 readers at care2.com are mostly women, it seems. Some are just beginning their recognition about the deep problems of consumer society. Others are more stimulated by the plight of animals. They are part of the tree, and just so you know, the world's best scientists are also debating whether there is anything we can do to stop climate change. Last week on Radio EcoShock, we ran clips from the White House release of the new report, Global Climate Change Impacts on the United States. If you missed it, please download that free MP3 file from our program archive for June 19, 2009. How serious is it? Barack Obama appointed John Holdren as Assistant to the President for Science and Technology and Director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. He's Obama's top science advisor. As part of the U.S. Climate Impacts release, Holdren appeared on the weekly environmental program Living on Earth. Here's a clip from the June 19th interview with John Holdren.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood.
Well, first of all, I would say we're already noticing it. People are noticing changes in the growing seasons. They're noticing the increased frequency of wildfires, the increased frequency of floods in the United States. So the place to start is that we really are already experiencing adverse effects of climate change. What we will see if climate change continues unabated is all of these kinds of symptoms that I've described will become more severe. I would say that people in the West are likely to notice increasing difficulties with water shortages. In the longer run, one of the most noticeable effects is likely to be the increase in sea level that comes from a warming world and that we're already experiencing at a rate that is about twice the rate of sea level rise in the 20th century. You would have in some parts of the country where there might be 10 or 20 days a year over 100 degrees Fahrenheit now. You would in the future, with these large increases in average temperature, you might have 100 or 150 days a year that exceed what you might call the threshold of very, very hot that would have large impacts on agriculture.
Impacts on agriculture? What do you mean?
I mean the productivity of food crops would go down. You wouldn't be able to grow as much corn or wheat on an acre of land as you can grow today because the heat stress on the plants would be damaging their capacity to grow and bear grain.
Some people say, look, we're on this path. Climate change is inevitable. We're in it now. It's simply going to get worse. And the sense comes up that it may just be too late to do anything. How accurate is that?
I absolutely disagree that it's too late to do anything. What the science shows above all is that the more climate change we get, the more difficult it's going to be to cope with it. And we have opportunities by acting now and in the future to drastically reduce the amount of climate change we're going to be experiencing. I mean, this is a very simple proposition. More is worse, less is better, and we have the opportunity by taking action to make it less. That's what we ought to be doing.
The Gulf Coast all the way to Minnesota, we're talking about oppressive conditions. These are high temperatures. Little Rock, 100. Chicago, 94. Detroit, 93. Tampa, 94. Atlanta, 93. But when you factor in the heat and humidity, it feels like it's actually anywhere from 5 to 10 degrees above. It'll feel like 100 in Tampa, 106 in New Orleans, Indianapolis, 97. Tulsa, 109.
But we've been having extremely hot weather for about the last week and a half. The high today is expected to be 98 or higher. The record high for today is only 94 degrees. So we're probably going to break it today. We broke a record here in Miami yesterday. Saturday, we tied the record. And it's like that all over the South. I mean, we're going to see 100 degree weather likely today in Montgomery, Memphis. Parts of Kansas are feeling it. In Tallahassee, Florida's capital, they're expecting a high today of 102 degrees, and they've had 100 or higher degree temperatures for the last 6 days in a row. Normally, they only have 200 or higher days per year.
Reporting from MSNBC News, June 23, 2009.
Do we still get to avoid more warming here?
There is nothing that we can do to stop a climate change in its tracks. There's a tremendous amount of momentum built into the climate system. We are not yet experiencing the full consequences of the heat-trapping gases we've already added to the atmosphere because of time lags in the way the global climate system responds. So we will see some continuing increase in global surface temperature and regional increases in surface temperatures no matter what we do. But we have a big opportunity to minimize the amount of change we will experience. The aim that most scientists who study this matter have agreed is one that is still within reach and is highly desirable, would be to stabilize the concentration of heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere at a level that would limit the global average surface temperature increase to about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit above the pre-industrial level. Now, if we do everything right, I think we could achieve that.
Do you really believe that the United States will act to hold global warming within 2 degrees centigrade, or that China and India will partake in that? Look, the Waxman-Markey bill is floundering. The Senate has just wandered it down terribly. Obama shows no sense of moving against coal. I don't believe it's going to happen. I'm sorry, I've got to go with Derek Jensen on this one. We're heading for big climate change.
It'll soon be over for you. The rest of us, the walking wounded, must go on living for a while.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
You haven't heard?
Heard what?
The radio.
We can hear similar warnings all over the world, from the United Nations on down. Here's a recent release from the British Environment Agency with its head, Lord Chris Smith.
Climate change is undoubtedly happening already. We know that even if we stop emitting all greenhouse gases tomorrow, climate change will carry on happening for quite a while yet. But we can either make it better or we can make it worse. And if we carry on as we are at the moment, carbon dioxide emissions increasing by 3% a year globally, if we carry on like that, then we're not just going to face difficulties, we're going to face catastrophe as a planet. That we need desperately to try and avoid. One of the things that I feel very strongly is we can fix this. We can deal with it. We can change the way as a society that we work. And unless we do that, we're going to face serious problems.
The top science advisor to Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany, is Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber. He's with the Potsdam Institute. One of his most famous papers is simply titled, Global Warming, Stop Worrying, Start Panicking. I could spend another hour explaining the complete breakdown of the recent talks in Bonn. Those were supposed to set up a survival route for humanity with a new agreement to save the climate. That was by rapidly reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. Greenpeace issued a fake edition of the International Herald Tribune with the headline, "World Leaders Sign Pact to Avert Climate Disaster." So many of us dream to read those headlines. Quote, in a front-page ad in today's International Herald Tribune, the leaders of the European Union thank the European public for having engaged in months of civil disobedience leading up to the Copenhagen Climate Conference that will be held this December. It was only thanks to your massive pressure over the past 6 months that we could so dramatically shift our climate change policies. To those who were arrested, we thank you. Oh, yeah. Well, here is what really happened. Likely you've heard some solid science, including on this program, saying we need to cut human-induced greenhouse gas emissions 40% by 2020 to keep a livable planet as we know it. That's a big cut, 40% by 2020. This is what countries have proposed so far, according to Phil England, the host of Climate Radio in the UK. Australia, well, it's not clear. A conditional target of 25%, but they're starting from a base year of the year 2000, not 1990 as they should. Canada is proposing a massive 2.7% cut. Ooh, boo for Canada and the tar sands. The EU is proposing 20 to 30%, half of which would be in offsets. That means, you know, some forest in some other part of the world, which could easily not work out or be faked. Norway is proposing 30%, a third of which could be offsets. Japan, just 8%, but no offsets. New Zealand is saying, well, we'll tell you later. Russia, yeah, later again. And the United States, a massive 0 to maybe 4%. The exact number is unclear because it's mainly in offsets and no real cuts. The IPCC's 2007 assessment, now considered to be based on old science, is that industrialized countries should be making cuts of 40% at the very least. So says Phil England. And to keep up with the international climate negotiations, you must listen to Climate Radio with host Phil England. Go to climateradio.org for all his programs. So, we can forgive the public for fearing the worst, for feeling like we should give up. Let's visit that pit of despair with the granddaddy of give up, Sir James Lovelock.
Now, the Earth's been in, it has two comfortable states, or perhaps three. One that the geologists call the ice houses, the glaciations, long states of lots of glaciers and cold. And the other state is what they call the hot houses, about 6 degrees warmer than now, that sort of thing. And
now, 6 degrees doesn't sound a lot, but it's disastrous.
It's Celsius, of course, not Fahrenheit, right. But it's an average for the world. Right. And that means it can be very hot in given places, much hotter than that.
So there's nothing we can do to reverse what's happened so far?
I wouldn't say absolutely nothing. If everybody could get together around the world, which would require a great deal of political action, and get farmers everywhere to convert their wastes to char, that's charcoal, and either bury it in the soil or drop it in the sea. That might make quite a difference. But we're awful slow to act. Consider Kyoto was 12 years ago, and not a lot has been done about global heating since then.
No, indeed it hasn't. And so, I mean, there's no action to reverse what's happened now. Is there any action to stop its ongoing destructiveness?
Well, my view is our duty is to survive. You see, it's not going to be totally fatal. There'll be quite a lot of us survive. And our descendants have got to inherit a worthwhile place. Like these islands, for example, are going to be horribly overcrowded. So are lots of other places in the world. We don't want it to turn into some sort of shackville. We want it to them to have sort of decent cities with proper infrastructures. And that's enough of a job to keep us busy. I don't think we should be wasting time and energy trying to stop it with rather useless means. They talk of a tipping point, that we go so far and then there's catastrophe. But it implies that you can go back if you don't reach the tipping point. I don't think we can.
That was Sir James Lovelock with interviewer David Frost on April 10th, 2009. Our next clip comes from a program called The Hour on CBC in Canada with host George Strombolopoulos.
Is it certain parts of the globe that are going to be harder hit than others?
Very much so, and Canada is unusually favoured. This is the sort of place, when it happened before 55 million years ago, life not only survived, but things moved here to get away from the heat. Mm-hmm. And that's likely to happen again. But this time it'll be people moving. And I think the main problem for Canada will be how to handle the influx of people from outside the world and when to be able to say, no, we've got enough now. If we take any more, we can't feed you. The best way to look at it is, I think of yourself as somebody walking in a forest somewhere, and you pick up a gun, and you accidentally pull the trigger and it goes off and does some damage. You didn't intend to do that. You kind of pulled the trigger by accident, and that's what we've done. We pulled a trigger on the system, and the system is now moving into another state.
So let's say, like, in centuries and centuries from now, this could have happened anyway, but we've just kick-started the process.
Exactly.
Wow. So that means, then, that we should have a really good time, shouldn't we?
Well, it won't be all bad. No. There'll be some exciting moments, I think.
For sure. Is it reversible?
No, it isn't. That's the crux of it. I think a lot of people around the world, particularly politicians, the people who had the Kyoto meeting, the Bali meeting, they think that if we're good and we stop burning fuels and everything, it'll all go back to where it was. It won't.
Can we slow
Once it started moving, you can't stop it.
Can we slow it down?
I wouldn't say we can't, but I don't think we can. Renewables are a joke. I mean, they will not supply anywhere near enough energy at all. But they're very, very good for business. You can make a lot of money going into renewable energy.
So how do you... So environmentalists don't like you very much, do they?
No.
Is there a chance you're wrong in your mind?
Of course there is. I'm a scientist, and you can never be certain about anything. Mm-hmm.
And so how long does it take to get to the place where we can no longer... Like, are you saying that... You're not saying the entire human race will be wiped out, but you're saying
heavens,
that...
Heavens, no. No.
But a significant number. You're not talking about a party here.
I'm afraid so. As many as 7 out of 8 are likely to be wiped out, yes.
Is that bleak enough for you? The big call. Billions of humans dead as humans race towards the poles to escape killer heat, storms and blowing sand, and agriculture falls apart. Whoa.
Ain't no real big secret,
Petty speaks about the environment at rockearth.com.
I've always put a lot of stock in the human being, you know, maybe more than I should. But I put a lot of stock in humans. I know some humans that are pretty doggone great and pretty doggone powerful. So being a cautious optimist, I tend to trust that the humans will somehow save us from total annihilation. But as far as the environment goes, I don't know if it's getting better or worse, you know, and at least there's an awareness that it's a bad thing to tear it up, which we didn't have, you know, not so many years ago. But I think it's got a long way to go. I think we're just going to really have to count on people. And it's a corny thing to say today, and it's an almost laughable thought, because they've just torn hell out of everything they've ever got their hands on. But I think there's something in them that could also do something really great.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You could stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. I'm gonna stand my ground. I won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground. And I won't back down.
This is Radio EcoShock, and that was a bit of Tom Petty, the studio version with a little Live Aid crowd mixed in. Tom Petty is one of the many musicians participating at Rock the Earth at rocktheearth.org.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. We're talking about whether we can still turn this thing around, or is the climate already gone? Should we just party hardy, fly around the world, drive gas guzzlers like there's no tomorrow?
Grousing about gas prices has become our new national pastime, but as it turns out, we're griping while we guzzle.
The United States has 5% of the world's population and 30% of the world's automobiles, but the country contributes 45% of the world's automotive emissions of the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide.
I don't even know how many miles it gets to the gallon.
Earlier, we heard from James Lovelock, the controversial scientist who thinks that we should. At age 90, he intends to toss a pile of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere just so he can be a space tourist. But Lovelock has been wrong as much as he's been right. Thanks for raising our awareness of Gaia, the urge of living things to work together for life. And thank you for the tool that showed micropoisons in the atmosphere, like chlorofluorocarbons. But Lovelock totally misjudged these CFCs that damaged the ozone hole so badly. He admits his mistake on a great Radio Adelaide broadcast on July 7, 2007.
And I thought of this idea, well, if I measure these CFCs in the air during this voyage, it would be a way of measuring how much the air in the northern hemisphere mixes with the air in the southern hemisphere, which is one of the things all the geophysicists wanted to know, because we knew how much was being released into the northern hemisphere, so it was a simple calculation to work out from the ratio of the concentrations just how much mixing was going on in the atmosphere. So I set off on this ship, measured them all the way right down and back again, and published it as a little paper in Nature. I made the biggest boo-boo in my life, because at the beginning of the paper I stated, these substances represent no conceivable danger. And I was thinking of the from a poisonous point of view, because a lot of people in those days were so frightened of anything with chlorine in. I was sure that the moment I wrote the paper, somebody would be saying, but there's chlorine in the atmosphere, we'll all get cancer from breathing. And of course, that's sheer nonsense. But I didn't realize, of course, that what happened to them when they got in the stratosphere and the way that they destroyed ozone. But two very competent chemists in America, Molina and Rowlands, saw my paper and realized that these substances might be a source of free chlorine in the stratosphere, and that would destroy ozone.
A boo-boo?
Take a look at these people, Alex. They've lived half their lives with no ozone layer.
Lovelock fails to add that he testified to Congress for the chemical industry for big money. His testimony may have delayed action on CFCs and damaged the ozone hole. It took a decade of protests, people hanging themselves from buildings and blocking railway cars and fighting on, to bring the world governments to CFC banning action in 1987 with the Montreal Protocol. In fact, Lovelock's career is festooned with serious errors. He advocated tearing down Britain's hedgerows for industrial farming, wiping out many native bird and animal species. He's pushed dangerous nuclear power while fighting against clean wind energy. And he lulls activism to sleep with statements like this, also from Radio Adelaide.
Don't take the IPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's models, too seriously. I think they're the best that scientists can do at the moment, but what they show is that the more CO2 goes in the air, the higher the temperature gets, and they're predicting by the end of the century it may go up as much as 8 degrees Celsius, which would be pretty devastating if that's the average for the whole planet. We really would be in trouble. But if you look back on the Earth's history, you find times when accidentally large amounts of carbon dioxide went into the atmosphere, and when that happened, the temperatures didn't rise up right to 8 degrees. They leveled off at about 5 degrees up and stabilized again and remained regulated there. And the last event of that kind was 55 million years ago. And when it happened, most of the Earth went to desert, like the Great Australian Desert. But it was okay up in the Arctic, and life had time to move up there. It may have been okay in the Antarctic in those days too, but we don't have too much evidence about that. But it stayed up in those northern and southern regions until it cooled off again. But it took 200,000 years to cool. So there's no great extinction. Life went up there and then moved back again. And the same, I think, will happen again.
Except that there may be some extinctions nonetheless. We, for instance, could be victims. Or will we survive?
We'll survive. We're one of the toughest animals on Earth. And so will Gaia. The whole system survives. So it's not all bad, but it's a pretty rough event. But on the other hand, don't forget, we've been as a species on the planet for nearly a million years now, and there have been 7 incidents nearly as bad as that during that million years. And that's every time we move from an ice age to an interglacial like now. There's a temperature rise about the same as will happen this century. And we've survived through all of that, so I reckon we'll survive through this one. But there will be an enormous cull if as much as 20% of us remain after 2100, we'll be lucky. Similarly, if you look back in the Earth's past history, you find that it went through hot spells many times in the past. The one we know best about took place 55 million years ago, when the Arctic Ocean became so warm as to be tropical. But life persisted. It had time to move up there, nearly all of it, so there was no great extinction. And when the Earth cooled off again, and it took 200,000 years, life moved back again and re-inhabited the Earth. I think that this is very much something that may lie before us.
Yes, climate shifts have happened many times before and life adapted, but at least 5 times previously. Life adapted by mass extinctions beyond anything we've ever known. The climate change he describes also developed over hundreds, if not thousands of years, giving the species time to adapt, maybe even to evolve. There has never been a species like us that could haul massive amounts of concentrated solar energy out of the ground as fossil fuels. And worse yet, James Lovelock fails to tell the audience that where we've found evidence of relatively fast climate shifts, say up to 5 degrees Celsius in a decade or so perhaps, it was from a very cold period, an ice age, to a warmer period like the interglacial period that we now inhabit. But this time, we're moving from a warm interglacial into a hothouse world way too fast. James Lovelock is 90, famous and wealthy and ready to push off. He can be optimistic about a giant cull of humanity, mass death within the lifetimes of our descendants or sooner. Oh, great. So let's just give up and enjoy ourselves with another cruise ship holiday? No thanks. I've got a much better scientist role model for you and for me.
We did not realize until recently that previous warm periods, the previous so-called interglacial periods, some of which were warmer than the present one, were not very much warmer. At most, 1 degree warmer than the present period. On the other hand, there were times, if we go back 3 million years ago, when the Earth was about 3 degrees warmer, but it was a different planet. There was no sea ice in the Arctic, and sea level was at least 15 meters higher, probably about 25 meters higher. That's 80 feet. I mean, that's a huge climate change. It's something that we really would have a very hard time dealing with because we've set up all of our infrastructure with the coastlines where they are now. And also, a warming that large would have a huge impact on many species. It would drive many high-latitude and high-altitude species to extinction. So we really cannot afford, we really don't want to have a climate change of anything like that magnitude.
It's James Hansen, the head of NASA, Goddard Space Institute for Space Studies in New York City, and a professor at Columbia University. Way back in 1988, he warned the U.S. government that climate change could damage our world.
What did you say to the Congress 20 years ago, and how is it received?
Well, I said that 1988 was likely to be the warmest year in the history of instrumental measurements. And I said that the Earth had entered a period of long-term warming. I could say with 99% confidence that it would continue to get warmer. And that this was almost certainly due to human-made greenhouse gases. And that this affected the probability of extreme events like heat waves and droughts. And since then, the events have proven those statements to be basically correct.
That was James Hansen speaking with the unbeatable Diane Reams of NPR in a 20-year retrospective.
Hansen on Democracy Now!
NASA's top climate scientist, James Hansen, warned on Monday the world has long passed the dangerous level for greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and that the Earth is nearing a tipping point. Hansen said, quote, "We're toast if we don't get on a very different path. This is the last chance." He also called for the government to block the construction of new coal-fired plants. During an interview on NPR, Hansen called for the chief executives of oil companies to be tried for their role in spreading disinformation on climate change.
The groups, the American Geophysical Union, the American Meteorological Society, the National Academy of Sciences, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is a United Nations international organization, all of these large panels of scientists have made very clear statements about the reality of global warming and its cause. So the of course, in the hundreds of thousands of scientists in the world, you can find a number of them which will say anything, and that gets a lot of attention because the fossil fuel industry has taken the position that it will give prominence to those contrarians. And that's one of the big problems we have, because now the public does not know that there's such a large consensus among the scientific community. Because it sounds like there's a debate, and there's really no real scientific debate. Global warming enhances both extremes of the hydrologic cycle, and that means not only heat waves and droughts and forest fires, which go with the higher temperatures at times and places where it's dry, but also at the other extreme of the water cycle, when the atmosphere is warmer, it holds more water vapor. And therefore, when you get rain, you get heavier rains and larger floods. And for example, where I live near the Delaware River, we've had 200-year floods in the last 10 years. And where I used to live in Iowa, we've had 2 500-year floods in the last 15 years. Well, that's, you can't blame any one of these events and say that's due to global warming, but you can blame the frequency and the severity of these events on as one of the impacts, expected impacts, of global warming.
But it does require that we have a moratorium on any new coal-fired power plants, and over the next 25 to 30 years, we're going to have to phase out those that exist. And this is going to become very clear within the next several years. So it is just plain silly to build a new one now, because you're not going to be able to grandfather these in and say, oh, we've got it, we can keep it. Uh-uh, it's not going to work that way. Once the government really understands how serious the problem is, these plants are going to have to go. So it just makes no sense to make another one now.
Forest fires will increase with global warming. And if you look in regions like Canada and Siberia, where there isn't a smoky bear putting out these things, we see big increases in forest fires as global warming is occurring. So there is a causal relationship. And another thing that is affecting it is with global warming, the latitudinal distribution of the overturning circulation, that means a rising motion in the tropics and subsiding motion in the subtropics, that circulation cell expands as the globe gets warmer. And it has expanded by about 4 degrees of latitude. That's about 400 kilometers. That's affecting the southern United States and the Mediterranean region, Australia, and parts of southern Africa, so that the fires you see in the southwest, in California, in the Mediterranean last year, that probably does have a relationship to global warming.
James Hansen, he's director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies.
Hansen went on to warn that there may not be any limit to the amount of global warming humans could inflict on this planet. James Lovelock, you recall, said natural systems might stop warming at 5 degrees Celsius, still enough to send us scurrying to the poles. Lovelock had no real science to suggest that anything could save us this time. Other scientists, like America's Michael Oppenheimer, aren't so sure.
What's going on now, definitely, is that the greenhouse gases are building up due to human activity, not due to these biological changes. And there's nothing to reverse that except us reversing emissions, nor do we know of any limit in the climate system that would stop the warming. There could be one. Maybe when we get to 4 to 5 degrees warming, there's something that happens that we don't know about. There's a lot we don't know. But, you know, we can't make policy based on a hope.
NASA's James Hansen goes further. In many speeches, he warns humans may create climate change so severe that it would create, quote, a different planet. He compares the case of Venus, the baked planet enshrouded by a carbon-loaded atmosphere. Speeches and radio EcoShock shows about James Hansen litter our website at ecoshock.org. Go ahead and listen to the man. Instead of giving up, Hansen is leading the way towards scientific activism. In this spring, he appeared at an anti-coal demonstration in Britain. This past week, he dared arrest, and possibly a wacko attack, by joining a demonstration against mountaintop removal mining, the worst kind of coal mining, in West Virginia. Let's let a native West Virginian, country music star and Grammy Award winner Kathy Mattea, describe mountaintop removal mining.
Blood veins as blue as the coal. Blood veins as blue as the coal. The big seams of coal in West Virginia and a lot of Kentucky have all been mined. So what's left are real thin seams, and that means strip mining. Strip mining is rampant right now, and it's raping the countryside. What if you knew that every time you flip on your light switch, a mountaintop in West Virginia just blows up? It's crazy. In these rural areas, a lot of times that is the best way to make money if you are unskilled labor, if you don't have a college degree. And so, you know, you don't have a lot of power if you want to stay on the piece of land where your family's lived for generations. It's just a lot to it. Well, I think that that's part of what we have to talk about. We have to try to get into a solution. so that we can make some kind of sensible transition to cleaner power. I think there are going to be many facets to the solution. There are people doing research right now on how to burn coal cleaner. So it may not be that we have to eliminate coal. But, you know, if our appetite for energy is so big right now that we will blow up mountaintops to the point where we have strip mines in West Virginia as big as half the area of Manhattan. You know, these things, it's not just the beauty of the mountains that's lost. The Appalachian Forest is the most diverse forest in North America. So we're losing habitat, we're losing species. The sludge ponds are contaminating the water. And then when they blast off the mountaintops and push all of that dirt that is not coal into the valleys, it contaminates the water for the people who live in the area. People in West Virginia are screaming about this. And people who mine this coal are screaming about this. It is a complex problem. But if we can't discuss it because we are so married to the way things are, then we can't find our way to a solution, and we must.
Again, that clip comes from the Green Radio show Living on Earth. That broadcast was January 4th, 2008, found at loe.org. 500 mountaintops blasted away just so Minnie and Mickey can keep the TV and lights on all the time? Illegally filling up valleys with sludge and rock? It's a sign of peak coal, really, just as author Richard Heinberg suggests. Just like the Canadian tar sands, where oil gets harder and dirtier to get, the best coal seams of West Virginia are already tapped out. So Massey Energy, aided by the big Wall Street financiers, blows up the mountains to get at the thin remaining seams.
Hi, I'm James Hansen. I'm a climate researcher. I understand that we need to stop coal emissions if we're going to preserve a planet. But we need your help if we're going to stop mountaintop removal. That's the first step in saving the planet, because it not only affects global climate, but also has large effects on local populations, especially young people. Here in West Virginia, there's an impoundment located just behind an elementary school, which is very dangerous for the children there. But it's a symbol of what of the nonsense that is occurring in our energy systems, and the fact that the political system is so responsive to large energy companies while not paying attention to the needs of the people, especially young people. We need to draw attention to that. So please help us by participating in the actions, by supporting putting pressure on Washington so that we can fix the climate problem and start at that by fixing the mountaintop removal problem.
There's no worry to Massey CEO and Black Lord of West Virginia, Don Blankenship. He doesn't believe in global warming.
I don't believe climate change is real. I do believe that the Arctic is melting and the Antarctic is getting colder. I believe it's a normal cycle.
James Hansen was charged with obstructing police officers and blocking traffic. He tried to enter the grounds of Massey Energy, but was met with a blockade allegedly formed by coal miners and their families.
Everybody, this is James Hansen. He's about to give a statement. If you want to...
In the course of their lives, people find they are being abused by those in position of power. And their children and their children's future are being damaged by those in power. It is the right of the people and their sacred duty to resist those in position of power and fight for the well-being of the young and the unborn. First, we believe that no child's health and safety are expendable for the expediency of a dirty energy source.
Actress Daryl Hannah is arrested.
First of all, to bring attention to the devastating effects of mountaintop removal.
and to make a call for clean, renewable, infinite energy resources, which we have available to us now.
Is it worth it, Daryl?
Absolutely. Is it worth it? No question about it.
I have no jobs to start and say, can you go back to Hollywood?
The company crowd hooted and hollered at James Hansen and Daryl Hannah as they were arrested. Well, that video clip came from West Virginia Public Broadcasting, recorded June 23rd, 2009.
Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on?
Daddy, working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoops, about to dip down.
Working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine, whoops, about to slip down.
'Cause I make a little money, hauling coal by the ton. But when Saturday rolls around, I'm too tired for having fun.
Too tired for having. I'm just working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
And who are those Wall Street men backing dirty coal? Well, here's one. George Soros, occasional friend of the left, takes up the coal industry on the Green Business Show, produced by Fortune magazine, June 14, 2009.
Well, George Soros has made billions by anticipating major shifts across financial markets. We're very happy to have him here with us today as he weighs in on the energy sector, specifically the coal industry. George, thanks for being here. In November of 2008, Soros Fund Management took advantage of some of the cheapest coal valuations in the last 5 years. Are you still investing in coal going forward? Are you planning to invest in coal? And why would you be doing that now when coal is coming under so much fire?
It's the coal we really hate.
The possibility of all these embargoes is just waiting in the wings.
Well, I don't know actually what my team is doing on coal, so I can't comment on whether we're buying or selling. But certainly, if you have cap and trade and clean coal, then I think coal has a future, and I wish that the coal industry understood this better, because it's really carbon tax that will put them into business.
Can you elaborate on that? Explain.
Once you take the carbon out, then coal is a viable source of energy. And in fact, it's such an important source, and it's available locally, both in America and in China and in India. So it's also energy security that you actually can't do without it. And the other sources, like solar energy and biomass and so on, it can't grow sufficiently fast for the next 20 years to replace coal.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there's only one replacement for coal, which is clean coal. And that's the future of coal.
Mm-hmm.
So the coal industry, in opposing it, is extremely reactionary. It's like, you know, burying your head in the sand. Right now, I don't think you should be building coal plants that pollute. We should have an embargo on building new coal plants until you develop the technology for taking it out. But yet, you really need to do it because there is no substitute.
You have said publicly that you think a carbon tax would be a good thing, a step in the right direction. But then, wouldn't that be advocating policies that would go against your investments with clean coal then, or coal in general?
Yeah. First of all, I'm very happy to advocate policies that go against my investments.
Okay.
I when it comes to policy, I think the public interest should prevail and not the private interest. But actually, I think that there's a great future for coal once you take the carbon out.
Check out the Radio EcoShock blog for June 25th, 2009 to find a link to that Fortune video. It's a classic, partly because all the time George is talking about clean coal. The background video is just machines moving mountains of the black stuff. The black carbon keeps moving on while money talks. Oh yeah, the little screen of figures that flashes up just for a few seconds shows Soros Fund Management LLC, Top Coal Holdings shares, Arch Coal, $482 million, Console Energy, $12 million, as of February 2009, source, hoovers.com. George, get out of the coal business. It's killing the planet. Please, George Soros, don't kill us all off. This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. I began this program by asking if we should give up and party. You must know by now, we can't give up this rich planet and a decent life for all coming generations?
We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
But I don't think that means we can't enjoy ourselves. Feeling joy is more important now than ever. Let's feel joy about nature and about each other. Let's feel good about the people we meet in the struggle, the parties after the action, the love. Forget about James Lovelock. Let's enjoy and save the climate, too. Find all our past shows for free download at our website, ecoshock.org. Thank you for not giving up. Here is Michael Jackson.